Thank you so much for the invitation. I'm so very excited to be here. It's always a pleasure to be at Perimeter. I'm going to tell you about language models and how we can use them to simulate quantum mechanics. I guess I'll motivate the talk with this notable paper, so Simulating Physics with Computers by Feynman in the 80s. Where the idea of using quantum systems to simulate its own dynamics was introduced, and this paper is fundamental. It motivated and shaped the field of quantum computing, which hopes to revolutionize computation and through exploitation of quantum mechanical effects. Okay, so that paper is very fun to read. It's very interesting, and there's also a section, so section five, where Feynman asks, can quantum systems be probabilistically simulated by a classical computer? And so the answer is no. I mean, he argues, basically today this is still true, linked to the notion of quantum speedup in quantum computing and so on. And the reason why we think we can't do this is because negative probabilities arise here and there, either in the representation of the quantum state or in the dynamics of the quantum state. Okay, so we think this is not possible, and we should be building quantum computers to in the end, solve this problems with simulating quantum systems. So we can't simulate quantum systems exactly with probability, but we can still ask the question, can we do it approximately, right? Using probabilistic models, for instance. And that's the question we ask, and we answer partially using language models. Okay, so what are language models and where do they come from? So they come from natural language processing, which is a branch of computer science, linguistics, and machine learning concerned with giving computers the ability to process text and spoken words in a similar way humans do, okay? And so they're used in, NLP, natural language processing, is used in machine translation, speech recognition, sentiment analysis, text summarization, and more. So it's something that we use almost every day. So for instance, when you go on Google and you do translate a text, you're using NLP, using machine learning. And so I guess the most famous example that we've been hearing about is ChatGPT. It's a machine learning model which interacts with humans in a conversational way. So it has this dialogue format that makes it possible for the model to answer follow-up questions, admits mistakes, challenge premises, and reject inappropriate requests. And it's all over the news, and seems like it's gonna change the world as we know it. People believe this model will likely have deep technological and societal implications that we should all be thinking about. And here's two examples, for instance, ChatGPT can pass the United States medical licensing exam and the bar exam for lawyers and MBA exams and so on. So it's changing a lot of aspects of our life. You've probably seen the interface and so on. And so I asked ChatGPT if Mona Lisa is smiling or not. And this is what it produces. It produces some sort of an answer, but in the end, it doesn't answer it very carefully. It just says that some people see it as a gentle, content smile, while others see it as ambiguous, with a touch of sadness and so on. So it's a very interesting model. It does a lot of interesting things, and it's a very powerful machine learning algorithm. You can also ask ChatGPT to draw the Mona Lisa, and it does its best. And in the end, it answers admitting that Mona Lisa is actually smiling in a way. The model admits that this is a minimal representation, it's not very good, and so there you go. So it's fun, it's a lot of fun to play with these models and so on, but I'm gonna explain how to use it for quantum systems, okay? So language models are based on neural networks, okay? And neural networks are powerful function approximators that can represent in principle any function. if you give it in, if you give the model enough parameters, okay? And in particular, in natural language processing, these models, these objects model things like this, like probability of some output text given some input text, which is what I what ChatGPT does. You give it an input, and then the model produces some sort of output text. But that's also what translation or how translation works. You give it an input text in, say, Spanish, and it gives you a probability distribution over the possible translations of the sentence that you introduced in the model. You can also use it to model language as it is, so no need to have a conditioning on any particular text and so on. And so, yeah, so these are the type of objects this, this systems model. So they have this sort of structure, it's very generic. So most machine learning models look like this. So they have an encoder, which if you want to read what the sentence that you're trying to condition on, for instance, if you ask ChatGPT to write a poem about quantum states, it just this sentence gets fed into the encoder, and this encoder usually produces a high-dimensional vector that represents this sentence, write a poem about quantum states, and then it has a decoder that that has the probabilistic aspect of the model built in, and then it, when you sample it and when you call it, then it produces all these sentences and all these drawings I was showing there. So in a world of quantum states where entanglement dictates and blah, blah, and so on and so forth. So this is the structure of these models. And it's very generic. So for instance, in around 2014, people were using recurrent neural networks to do machine translation and text processing. And so it has that encoder, and has this high dimensional vector that represents the sentence or the language that you're trying, the sentence you're trying to translate or to analyze, and then a decoder that produces the output. So this was the state of the art at the time in 2014, 2015. But then eventually, in 2017, there was a new, more powerful architecture called the Transformer. But what I want to point out is that it has the same structure, right? Like it has an encoder that takes the input, say the text, and then produces a high-dimensional vector that represents the text, and then a decoder that produces the output of the model. And this is the architecture behind all those advances that you see in the news, this transformer architecture. But how to use these models to represent physical states, that's what I'll be discussing. So first of all, we'll get rid of the encoder, because when you have a quantum state, you don't have to condition on anything in principle, although people are coming up with very interesting applications of this idea for the entire model. But in my talk, I'm gonna focus on a decoder-only transformer or language model. So we set this this high-dimensional vector to zero, for instance, and what we do is we change the words for variables in a quantum system. Okay, so you have, for instance, some word one, word two, word three, and so on, and then we'll change it to, I don't know, spin up or spin down, or the outcome of a measurement on a quantum system, very generically. Okay, and so we basically replace the words and the characters in the original model, and we replace them with the degrees of freedom in the system of the quantum system. Okay, so we go from a large dictionary of words where like number of words can be, I don't know, 8,000 to for instance the measurement outcomes on a quantum system. So I don't know, for instance, 0, 1, plus, minus, right, left, different measurement outcomes on the quantum system. The other thing that's important about these models is that they are autoregressive. And let me explain what this term means. So autoregressive originates from the time series models, where observations from a previous time steps are used to predict the value of the current time step, for instance. So considering a probability distribution P of this variable sigma 1 through sigma n, so what the chain rule of probability in statistics tells us is that we can write it down or factorize it in this way. Probability of sigma 1 times probability of sigma 2 probability of sigma 3, condition 1 and 2, and so on and so forth. And so generically, to specify such probability distribution requires exponential resources because you have a bunch of probabilities to tabulate. Okay, and so we don't want that. That's hard to store and hard to handle numerically. So what people do in machine learning is parameterize these conditionals. Okay, so all these recurrent neural networks and transformers, what they do is exactly that. So instead of writing this in tabular form, you parameterize it in terms of a powerful neural network. Okay, and so through these parameterizations in terms of neural networks, you can represent complex distribution using these models, and that's how these models operate. Okay, and they have several advantages. So computing the probability of some spin configuration or some sentence, if you want, or the amplitude if you're representing a wave function, it's efficient given some sigma, as opposed to, for instance, a Boltzmann distribution for which you would have to compute the normalization, which is usually very expensive. They can be sampled efficiently in linear time in the number of degrees of freedom. They can be defined in any spatial dimension, so you can give the model some sort of sense of dimensionality, say 1D, 2D, 3D. Their expressive power can be systematically improved. They are universal function approximators, so they can represent, in principle, any probability distribution. They're easy to encode, for instance, mean field theories and so on. And we can impose symmetries and conservation laws that we may have in our system. And so all these advantages remain true if you're trying to model a quantum state. Okay, so how are we gonna do this? So we'll introduce a formulation of quantum mechanics that looks like, or looks closer to probability, so that if you want, we make quantum mechanics look like machine learning, that if we can think about it this way. And we'll use the generative models, in particular transformers and recurrent neural networks. And I'll discuss a few examples, but I'll focus on open quantum systems for today. Okay, so, but we've explored a bunch of other examples like quantum state tomography and simulation of quantum circuits and so on. So let me tell you how we do this. So usually a quantum state is described by a density matrix, and that's a vector in the Bloch sphere, and that looks like this. And everything we can possibly know about the state is encoded in this density matrix, which is a positive semi-definite Hermitian operator of trace one acting on the state space. But I'm saying we're going to be using probability to represent the quantum state. And so we introduce a positive operator value measures. So it's basically operators that describe how you measure quantum state in the lab. And so it's these operators, and they are positive semi-definite, and if you sum them, they add up to the identity, okay? And we're gonna use a family of POVMs, so positive operator value measures, called informationally complete, which basically what that means is that if we measure the quantum state, we know all, we can collect all the information about it. If you think of the quantum state as a three-dimensional object, what that means is that we're looking at the object from many different points of view, such that you can eventually reconstruct the quantum state out of these observations. And so that's the sense in which I understand this information complete POVM, and it's just the same as saying that the probability distribution of the measurement outcomes contains all the information about the state. And then there's that relationship between the quantum theory and the experiment. So you have some quantum state in the lab and you measure it with operator M, A, and then the measurement outcomes, A, will appear in the experiment with probability PA. Okay, so that's Born rule. And so what that means, or what informational completeness means, is that so we have Born rule, which Born came up with, but if the measurement is informationally complete, then what we can do is we can go from the probability distribution to the quantum state, as opposed to what Born rule does, which is going from the quantum state to the probability distribution, okay? So then we have this information and completeness, and we can write the quantum state in terms of the probability distribution and the measurements that you've applied, OK? okay? And so this relation is very nice. It allows you to do a bunch of different things, but the way I think about it is a positivization or a factorization of the quantum states in terms of a probability distribution and some single qubit tensors, okay? And so this is what we'll be using. So it's this expression, and with this we can do a lot of things. We can do quantum state tomography, we can do unitary evolution, Schrödinger equation, a Lindblad equation, and measurements, and so on. And so here I have, for instance, the Liouville von Neumann equation, and when I write it in terms of this probability distribution, this is how they look like. Okay, it's a differential equation on the probability distribution, like a master equation, okay? And so the insight we had and what we've been thinking about is, okay, so we'll have this density matrix and the probability distribution, and what we do is we introduce a model for the probability distribution, and then if we attach this single qubit tensors to the probability distribution, then we came up with a model for the quantum state raw. And we've explored this in many, many different settings. So for tomography, numerically, experimentally, numerical simulation of quantum circuits and open quantum system dynamics, so which is what I'm going to be focusing on. Okay, so let me recap. So we create a model for this probability distribution using this language model. So they model probability distributions. So we're going to use them to model this distribution over the measurement outcomes, and then we will attach the sensors, which will give us a probability distribution for the quantum state. Okay. Yep.
Yeah. Let me repeat my question. So, how do you get these coefficients, TA a prime, in this expansion?
Yes. Sorry. So it's so this so okay. These are the measurement operators. This describe your measurement, and this T it's. They depend on the measurement outcome. So basically, T is equal to trace of MA times MA prime, okay? And this is efficient because we select this measurement operators to be single qubit ones. And then so everything is single qubit, even the computation of this T inverse. So we do it for one qubit, and then we
say, I see, so you know them. Yeah, maybe it's a related question. So where is the kind of Hamiltonian of the system in this? So, or kind of the structure of the system? So these TAs, they presumably encode the structure of the system you are studying, right?
No, so I'll show you where the Hamiltonian and the Lindbladian comes in. This is just a representation of the quantum state so far. But well, let me, for instance, show you. So this is Liouville von Neumann equation. So it has a Hamiltonian and rho. And this is, so when you interpret everything in terms of the probability distribution, this is the differential equation that you get. So it's a probabilistic, a stochastic differential equation. And so you have T here. T is, doesn't depend, so the, yeah, T doesn't depend on the Hamiltonian, but the Hamiltonian shows up here, okay? But yeah, T basically depends only on the definition of your measurement operators.
So on the basis you are using, basically.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
I have a question regarding this equation. Measurement is not unitary, right? It is something outside of our system.
Yes, it's
but again, you have used Liouville equation of motion instead of Lindblad. Why?
So
it is unitary.
So this is unitary dynamics, yes.
But the measurement is something outside of our system.
And yes.
It is not governed by this unitary evolution.
Yeah, so but so what we do is we imagine the quantum states, and we're not thinking about measuring it per se. We imagine having this representation of the quantum state in terms of the probability distribution. And then if we measure it, if we do, so that's before doing time evolution. But if we do time evolution and eventually measure the system, the outcomes will show up with this probability A.
I see. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, so let me recap a little bit. So we create a neural network using this neural machine, this natural language processing models to represent the quantum state through this relation, with a probabilistic model being here attached to, we attach some single qubit tensors, and then that gives us a density matrix, okay? So what we're doing is we're representing the quantum state in terms of this probability distribution. So we go from a block sphere or block body of quantum states to a probability distribution, which are points in the in a standard simplex, okay? And so if you have, I don't know, some set of dynamics in your quantum system, then you go around somewhere in the block sphere, and then if you do all this, then you go to dynamics of probability distributions in the simplex, okay? So that's the idea, right? Like, the one thing that I wanted to note is that the simplex is too big in general, so some distributions in the simplex may not correspond to valid quantum states, and that's something we have to be careful about in our simulations. So here's a tiny example. So this is from this paper. I'm gonna just flash it just so that you see that this representation can be useful. So this is representing the ground state of physical Hamiltonians using this recurrent neural network or this transformer. So this is numerically simulating the ground state of this Hamiltonian on a system with 50 spins. For probability distribution, we use a deep neural network, a so-called gated recurrent neural network, and it's one of those earlier language models. And what you see here is that the synthetic state is in orange, and our reconstructed state is in green, and the correlation functions, so this is one-body correlation, this is two-body correlations, they match pretty well, okay? And this is for a little bit of a more challenging system, it's a 2D Heisenberg Hamiltonian on the square lattice, and again, this is correlation functions of the synthetic state, and these are reconstructions from the RNN. Yes.
What's a synthetic state?
It's so we perform density matrix randomization group simulations of the ground states of this system, so tensor network simulations, and then what we do is we measure, we mimic the experiment of measuring the system, we collect this data, and then we perform the reconstruction with the RNN or with the language models, and then reproduce the correlation functions in the system. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's kind of like a proof of principle that this language models can represent non-trivial quantum states in some sense. But we wanted more, so let me show you one slide about unitary dynamics. So when we do unitary dynamics, we take the density matrix and then we apply this unitary and we get some rotated density matrix rho u. And so you can follow all this Born rule and this mapping to probability distribution. What you get is this. So it's basically you take the original distribution and then you multiply it by a matrix O that depends on the unitary that you have applied and the measurements that you used basically to represent your quantum state. And so these matrices are unitary, but are also somewhat or quasi-stochastic matrices, meaning that if you sum their columns or their rows, what you get is a bunch of ones, so like a stochastic matrix. But the difference is that this O can be positive and negative, okay? Which accounts for all the interference and all the difficulties of simulating quantum dynamics with probabilistic representations, which Feynman found already in the 80s, okay? So in our representation, the probability distribution is a true probability distribution, but the dynamics or the unitary evolution, if you want, has all this plus or minus signs that makes it impossible for us to use, for instance, Monte Carlo simulations to perform the simulation. But nevertheless, we tried, and we have a paper about simulating quantum unitary dynamics. But I'm gonna focus on open quantum system dynamics here. So how, we took the Lindblad equation, which is basically the Liouville von Neumann equation plus this dissipative terms, okay? So what we do is, again, we use this construction using Born rule and the measurements, and then we go to a differential equation on the probability distributions that we've been using. And it looks like this. It has P dot equals to sum over B of P of B, and you have this piece, which is the unitary dynamics part, so it corresponds to this piece, and this piece, which corresponds to the dissipation in the system, okay? And so that's what it looks like. This is the differential equation we would like to solve, okay? And how do we do this? So we will perform an integration of this differential equation. It's very high dimensional, it's a many-body system. But what we do is it's different. We take inspiration from the trapezoidal rule in differential equations, and we design an objective function so that if we optimize it with gradient descent, and if the optimization goes well, then the trapezoidal rule is implemented exactly. Okay? So that's the idea. And note that there's no data. So machine learning is famous for being data hungry. You need a lot of data to train it and so on. But here we don't need any data. So everything is based on representing the state in terms of the distributions and this language models and the differential equations or the physical laws that we're trying to track. Okay. So this is the trapezoidal rule. So it's basically how you evolve your y, which will be our p in time, using the expression for your differential equation, okay? And so in principle, we could apply this, but our values of y take on exponentially many different numbers as the dimensionality of the quantum state that grows exponentially fast. So we can't do this. So we have too many outcomes to use the rule directly. And so what we do is we write the trapezoidal rule, and then we subtract this piece and this piece, take the absolute value, and this should be zero if it was implemented exactly. But then what we do is we compute it approximately. We compute this difference approximately, and then we minimize it with gradient descent with respect to the parameters in the model. So that's the spirit of the approach. There's a lot of details, but that's... that's just what we do. And we use transformers, which are the same models behind the ChatGPT model. And this was published last year. We can also do fixed point dynamics, which is when you wait until a very long time. So the system usually approaches a fixed point at the end. And it's the point at which the probability distribution does not change in time, so dp dt equals zero. And then we can also come up with a way to define a cost function or an objective function that we can optimize with respect to the parameters of the model, so that we can solve the problem, or approximately solve the problem. And so these are the examples. So if you want, this is real-time dynamics of the Heisenberg model in 2D. So this is the Heisenberg model that has these terms. It has this dissipative term, and we basically try and follow the dynamics of this Lindblad equation. So this is a tiny system. It's 3x3 because we were trying to test with respect to exact results. And the initial state is the state that is fully polarized along the z direction. And then, as you can see, we can track the dynamics. This is with respect to the exact dynamics integrated with a numerical, like an exact numerical differential equation integrator. And what we see is that we can track this dynamics really accurately. Okay, so here I don't have other examples, but we're able to go to systems which are bigger than what you can do with exact methods. So that was exciting and interesting, and the results are very, very accurate. Okay, so that's good. And these are quenches in the transfer field ISA model with dissipation. So this is already 16 qubits. This is the Hamiltonian of the system. With this dissipators, and what we want to do here is to target the steady state simulation. So basically, you let the system time evolve for a long, long time until the state doesn't change anymore. The initial state is, again, the fully polarized state along the z direction. Then, okay. And what you see here is basically, again, with respect to the exact results, our results based on this transformer architecture track really well the exact solution, and even compare with earlier approaches that use other machine learning architectures, so in a, say, more accurate way. So this is sigma x, sigma y, and sigma z as a function of g, which is the value of the transverse field along the x direction. Okay, so that's exciting, or at least it was exciting to us. And then the last thing we did, well, we did many things, but the last thing I want to mention is we benchmarked against classical and even quantum algorithms. So here we were benchmarking against classical simulations. So this is again the same. So this is the 3x3 Heisenberg model. We benchmark it against this reference here, and we found again that this language model performs better than a recent paper. But I guess the most interesting result, in our opinion, was that even we can do better than quantum algorithms for simulating open quantum system dynamics. And so these are the exact results, and our results are this in pink, whereas the quantum algorithm is this here. So a little bit more accurate, if you want. Well, more accurate in all cases that we saw, at least compared with this open quantum system quantum algorithms. So let me conclude. So we've introduced a probabilistic representation of the quantum state that we leverage to combine it with large language models, or models borrowed from natural language processing, for the simulation of open quantum system dynamics. We've explored also the simulation of quantum circuits and quantum state tomography. So the good news is optimization of these problems, or the numerics that is involved, is relatively simple. It's easy, no instabilities and so on. But it requires a lot of samples and relatively some significant amount of tricks to improve the variance of the gradients that we use to perform these optimizations. So we can do a lot of things in the future, like, for instance, explore different architectures, other language models, or even neuromorphic architectures, different objective functions, all these objective functions that we came up with, and the inspiration that we took from numerical differential equation integrators. It's flexible, so we can come up with better ones and explore which ones are more efficient and so on. That's it. And we're thinking about applications beyond quantum mechanics, like solving high-dimensional probabilistic differential equations using these models, like chemical master equations and Boltzmann equations and so on. So I think there's a lot of opportunities here, and that's it. Thank you.
Thank you, Juan, for the very nice talk. I can see Matt has got his hand up.
Is there a proof that you can represent any system in this in a complete basis of probabilities, or is it sort of something you have to do on a system by system basis? You know, like, are there cases where you can't come up with this complete basis of POVMs?
It depends on how you think it, but in general, it is possible. So, for instance, the way we did it here, so we took this informationally complete measurements, and they were single qubit. So what we do is we do tensor products of the single qubit operators, and so by doing that, you can do it for any system size. But there are other informationally complete measurements that act on the entire state, and for which we don't know if they exist in any dimension, for instance. They're called SIC, symmetric information incomplete POEM. So for those, we don't know, but at least when you start from, say, low dimensional system at the, say, 1 degree of freedom level, you can always do tensor products and you will always find such representation. But it really depends on the availability of, at the 1 degree of freedom level, if you can construct it, then yes, you can always do it for the many-body system.
Juan, thanks for a nice talk. If you go back to the last but one transparency, you mentioned about variational before, comparison.
Right.
So can you act like a guide in the sense you do this classical simulation and then tell the variational people to improve their variational answers so that they can do better?
Yeah, so they should be able to do better, right?
With some guidance from you, because you have done your calculation using this new method, and which is very accurate. So can you guide them to do better?
Yeah.
Eventually.
I think they will be able to do better, yes.
With guidance from you, because whatever you have learned, can you transfer your knowledge to them?
I'm not sure. So they use quantum circuits.
Correct. And also some variational answers.
Yes.
So maybe you can help them improve their answers to go much beyond.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll have to think a little bit about it, but in principle, yes. Yes. Because the way I'm thinking about it right now is so there's some connections between the models we use and a tensor network. And then there are connections between tensor networks and a quantum circuit. So you can basically follow that path, and I think it should be fine.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi there. So the examples you've given are open quantum systems, which tend to have quite low entanglement. The dissipation reduces the entanglement. So I'm wondering how, representing systems purely with probability distributions, it's tough when you get into highly entangled systems. In particular, I think of things like Bell's inequality. So if you assume a probability distribution for a set of measurements locally, you're going to run into trouble. And so I wonder if there's a clever way to get around that and represent entanglement in these systems and get around locality and things like this.
Yeah, so I have several comments about it. This is a very important question. So this is the quantum state. The entanglement would be about how you, how is this side of the system correlated with this one. So when you write down everything in terms of probability distributions, that translates into mutual information of the probability distribution. Because there's tensors here that give the phases and so on to the quantum state do not carry any entanglement. So it's everything is about, can you represent mutual information in the probability distribution? And we can. So for instance, we know we've been able to represent, say, Bell pairs and so on using this probability distribution, and there's no issue, okay? So you can represent, so as long as your mutual information is high in the probability distribution, you'll be able to carry that correlation interpret it as entanglement, right? So we can represent very entangled states, and in our paper where we studied unitary dynamics, we looked at representing GHZ states, which carry some entanglement, and everything is really dependent on the power of your architecture. So this represents any state, right? Like in principle. So this expression, and so if your model can learn this distribution, so even the exact one for any quantum state, then you're in good shape and you can represent entangled states.
So there is some learning going into that step.
Sorry?
There is some learning going into the green box
Yeah, so the way we do it, so in principle, so this factorization is always true, right? So you can represent any quantum state no matter how entangled, there's gonna be a probability distribution. But the question is, when you do this change from the exact distribution to the model distribution, can this model capture what the true distribution has, which can be quite complicated, and the complications will arise because of entanglement entropy, most likely. Mm-hmm. I hope I answered more or less.
Back here. I thought this was quite an interesting talk. I'm wondering if you've given any thought to applying this approach to understanding Wigner functions, and I think it probably could be. The reason why I'm asking is that there's a lot of work going on in using Wigner functions to understand when a system can be regarded as classical and when it is not regarded as classical in terms of the negativity of the Wigner function. So what I'm just wondering is if you've given any thought to applying this approach to looking at Wigner functions instead of density matrices.
I have not. What I can say right now is that this, if you want, is a form of a phase space representation of the quantum state. It's just one in which the state is always a probability distribution, right? Yeah. Whereas Wigner has positive and negative values.
That's the whole point. It's a transform of rho and has positive and negative, so that somehow has to imprint on the way you're doing things.
Yes.
Yeah. Maybe we should talk privately.
I think so, yeah. If you have a bit of time later, happy to chat, but I haven't thought about it.
Then maybe ask the next speaker to come down and start getting set up while we take maybe one or two more quick questions. I think there was one here and then one there, if we've got time.
Yeah, thanks. I was just interested in, so the difference between the unitary dynamics and the Lindblad dynamics. So you sort of skipped over went quickly over the unit. So your method would work for both, but is there some resource constraint that means it's better for when there's dissipation? Or what's the difference between unitary and dissipative?
Yeah, so
open systems?
There's no difference in principle. So this is just a discretized version of this piece, right? Like, so this is just unitary dynamics in the continuous time. So if we get rid of, so if you make all this gamma zero, then you are back into this, here. And so this is just a discrete version of this. And in principle, you can do it. It turns out it's harder to do unitary dynamics. And it's because when you have probability distributions that are corresponding to very mixed quantum states, these distributions are simpler to represent. There's another point of view, which is, so when you do unitary dynamics, you're on the surface of the block body, okay? And that translates into the surface of what people call qplex, which is kind of like a quantum simplex. And so you're at the edge, and so you're most likely to make mistakes if you go away. So we have no way to constrain the models to stay within this this body. And so that makes the numerics harder. Whereas if you're inside the block sphere, when you do open quantum system dynamics, then you go inside this, and the probability or the numerics becomes easier. So you get closer to the center of the simplex, which is the homogeneous distribution, which is simpler to learn with this language models, at least in our experience. And it's, in principle, everything should work, but it's easier to make it work when you have open quantum system dynamics. Thank you.
I think in the interest of time, we should probably move on to the next talk. But
thank you so much, everybody.
All right, let's thank the speaker again.